Good afternoon, and welcome to the 17th edition or volume of the Baker-Polito administration's COVID-19 briefing for municipal chief executives. We're very pleased to have Lieutenant Governor Polito and the team from the administration here to provide you with another update and the latest information on the COVID-19 crisis, the pandemic, and all the steps that are being taken, and then to be able to answer some of your questions. As always, please, when you do have questions, put them in the chat function, and we will answer them, starting with the COVID-19 questions, answer as many of them as we can. We will post an audio recording and a summary of this briefing on the MMA website soon after the briefing concludes. At this point, it is my real privilege to once again ask Lieutenant Governor Polito to take over this meeting. She has been providing such excellent leadership for all of us. Lieutenant Governor Polito, thank you very much, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Jeff, for hosting again. 17 is a big number. We've been working together for a long time on a lot of good things, and obviously specifically over the past 17 weeks on COVID response and recovery. I just want to thank you and to your members who are on the call this afternoon for all of your hard work. Many of you are juggling a lot of different things. I was talking to one of the mayors this morning with COVID cases and fires in residential dwellings and trying to figure out how to support business and community endeavors and help get kids back to school. There's a lot on your plates in addition to figuring out how to fund the essential services of local government. Provide support to your own teams who have been working very hard throughout the pandemic and to move ahead. So thank you all. I would like to also thank Dr. Madoff, who's on our call from Public Health, as well as Captain Hornsby on from ANF, talk about budget issues, and Sean Cronin, as always, a faithful partner and friend on Division of Local Service and Local Matters. Today, we thought we'd start our conversation with an update from Commissioner Riley. Commissioner and his team at DESE have been hard at work, working with your superintendents and with the teachers' unions and membership there to determine how to safely reopen our schools, help our students achieve and have an experience this upcoming school year that will prepare them for their future. It's obviously a lot of moving parts, and the commissioner has rolled out a lot of guidance, just like we did for the industry sectors that we worked on together. He's been rolling out this guidance with the specific advice from medical professionals that have helped the commissioner and his team put together guidances that are reasonable, but medically backed and supported and available to the school districts in a format that are understandable, hopefully in a very complex area to be able to implement. I'd like to now turn it over to Commissioner Riley, who will give you an update and be available for questions that you might have at this time.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, and thank you, Jeff, for hosting this event. Appreciate the opportunity to speak with people again. Right now, we're currently in the middle of our two-step process with our school districts. I think people know, and districts have to submit their preliminary templates to DESE by this Friday, where they will kind of talk about all three models. Just backing up, reminding people that we ask districts to be prepared for all three contingencies: a full in-person model with certain medical parameters that have to be met, a full remote model in case there's a second spike, and then a hybrid model in case districts can only send half of the students back at one time while the other half learn remotely, and then they switch. And they have to kind of give us those templated plans by this Friday, July 31st, and then they're going to be working with their communities, and particularly the school committees, to finalize their choice for what they think is best for their individual community and submit that kind of final plan to us by August 10th. So communities have a little bit of time after kind of the initial submission and looking at all three plans to kind of settle on what they think is best in their individual city or town that they're in. And so again, a lot of the decision making will come through the school committee level. I've had an opportunity to speak to folks at the PTA, and parents are getting actively involved. There are obviously outside stakeholders that are trying to influence the process. And so this is a time for real democracy when communities need to come together and figure out what the best path forward is. We do think at this time, based on what we're hearing from the doctors, that trying to get kids back in person to the greatest extent possible is probably the direction we should be taking. We understand that things are subject to change, however, and so we've got to monitor what happens over the coming days, weeks, months, and God forbid, even year, as we sort out the trajectory of this virus and you know, kind of our transmission rates in the Commonwealth. A few other things that people need to know. We did, after discussions with the state teacher unions, agree to provide 10 additional days of training at the beginning of the school year so that teachers feel comfortable in this new kind of reality we're living in. Remember, school will not be the same, whether it's in person or hybrid. When kids come back, there's distancing things that have to take place. There's sanitation protocols that both students and staff have to follow. And there's just a new way of kind of doing business that people have to get adjusted to. So I felt very confident taking the 180-day rule and taking 10 of those days off to make sure that our teachers feel that they have the training that they need to open in a safe way. Again, we don't have negotiations with the teachers union at the state level because every individual district has its own negotiation and contract set up. But in this one area where DESE does have purview over the calendar, we were able to offer some relief. There are other things that the union was looking for, they were either dealt with in guidance or they're a local decision or they're a decision that can't be made. The union is interested in, for instance, killing off MCAS. That's a big deal to them right now. And what we've said is we're making, you know, right now we're anticipating going forward with MCAS, but we'll make no decision until later in the year after we see what's happening with our schools. I think people know that we've been very reasonable. Last year, we did cancel the MCAS due to the pandemic, and we also provided relief to seniors who maybe didn't have a chance to take the test, and certain students who were supposed to take a science test who also didn't. So we're always gonna try to be reasonable for that. On the other hand, I can't stress enough how important MCAS testing is to be able to identify gaps and weaknesses with kids and really to figure out where we as an educational community need to do better, where do we put our resources and things like that. So that decision won't be made till much later in the year. We are still waiting to see if the federal government is going to introduce a fourth stimulus package. We are cautiously optimistic that that could happen. But as you guys know, anything is possible in DC these days. We do think that that will be crucial when we talk about opening schools to have the necessary things that we need so that we can open in a safe way. We feel grateful to the federal government for the initial $194 million investment, also to the administration in Beacon Hill for the $200 million. On top of that, that's been granted, and we know there's almost another $400 or $500 million at the city levels that people can use to do things like buying supplies and materials, whether that's safety supplies, technology, and the like, or additional buses for transportation if that needs to happen. So right now, we think there is good money out there for districts to buy these supplies, but it would not be surprising if some districts have held back on spending of this money because they're afraid of what the budget is going to bring. That is, there won't be a forced stimulus or the Beacon Hill number will be really low and they'll have to fill gaps. And we're hoping that's not going to be the case, right? I mean, we've said at the beginning that if we really want to get our kids back to school, it's going to take level service plus. And the plus is these additional costs, whether it's transportation, staffing, safety supplies that we need to get our kids back in school. I would also say that, you know, in our guidance, we've put out the need to make sure that we take care of our communities that was historically under-resourced and make sure they get what they need so that we can get our kids back in. But the last thing I will talk about, and a lot of people have asked about, is the sports guidance. We have heard over and over from families that they do want to see kids back in school, but they also want to see sports take place. And we have a working group, the MIAA is kind of leading with you know, various other stakeholders to kind of figure out what is best. They're looking at everything from are there some sports that are more problematic than others? What does the calendar look like? Does it need to be truncated? And what can be done about opening sports? What we've seen across the region in New England is other states, K-12 districts are planning on having sports, but some with modifications. And so we have the medical community weighing in to try to figure out, is this possible? And if so, what are the modifications that will be necessary if we were to have sports in the fall? And so that's my basic overview, Jeff. I don't know if you want me to take questions now or how that works.
Commissioner, because I think you have a 1:30 deadline to stop, we should probably, if it's okay with the Lieutenant Governor, take some questions for you now. Sure. And that would be great. I'm going through in the chat function. I'll skip over the ones that are generally not school related. There are, of course, some questions about when the Chapter 70 number might be available. I know that state officials and Lieutenant Governor may say something about this later, are working to see if they can provide some guidance as early as possible. In breaking news, the legislature is going to be passing another 3-month budget extension so that the state budget will have a temporary framework in place, essentially keeping spending pretty level, matching last year until October 31st, giving the state time to develop a year-round budget plan with as much information as possible. Obviously, communities are looking for guidance before October 31st to be able to finalize their budgets. I'm not going to put Commissioner you on the spot regarding Chapter 70, since you're not the decider of that number. However, are there any other discussions or announcements regarding funding for the technology assessments or acquisition or other kinds of resources?
So the one thing that I didn't speak about earlier was the $25 million matching grant that districts have put in for. We do anticipate turning that around by next week. The idea being that districts would, with all of the monies I described earlier, would be able to pay for these things, but the state would also kick in some dollars towards that, and we'll be releasing that information. The application window is already closed, and we're just processing it now, and we're going to turn those dollars around quickly. So people should be hearing decisions from us by next week.
Another question is regarding the legal implications if a school district decides not to follow the guidance and stipulations from your department and from the Commonwealth. For example, not following a six-foot distance not having an appropriate mask protocol or having more people on buses than you recommend or other kinds of variants. What is the essentially the enforcement by the state?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope that it doesn't come to that. We recognize what we put out as guidance is just that, it's guidance. But what I would say is when we talk about the medical guidance we put out, those are more like mandates. And we have really used the doctors to help us inform those directives based on the science. And so one would expect that if people decide to deviate off of that, that we will get involved quickly and involve the local Board of Health and even, you know, the state Health and Human Services to make sure that that doesn't happen.
There's a question. In light of the recent concerns raised by educators and the potential inconsistencies in district by district plans, has there been reconsideration of a state-issued uniform approach for schools being either fully open, hybrid, or fully remote?
Yeah, so not at this time. I think people know that we cherish in Massachusetts our local control. And at this time, that local control rules the day. I understand that there are some people that would rather have me make the decision, but I just don't have the authority to do that, at least not right now. And so I think people should plan on local communities making those decisions, knowing that what we have mandated that they do is be prepared for all contingencies and then pick the one that's best for you.
It's more of a comment rather than a question. You've been talking with the state teachers unions, and you talked to us at a previous briefing about that and about having discussions. And just one concern is that it appears as though union officials are talking to the superintendents and so on, and this local official, this mayor, is asking that. As much as possible, you can share information real time about your deliberations with the unions as well, so that the management in communities is getting sort of balanced input about what your discussions are actually about.
Yeah, absolutely. And while I think the bulk of our discussions are over, we certainly will keep people apprised of what's coming next. What I would say is we really wanted to be respectful of the fact that there is local decision making, and more importantly, I think, is there are local union contracts, and we're not going to supersede any of those. What we could do at the state was provide some relief on the time on learning requirement of 180 days, because I just really believe that our staff and teachers need the time to train, so when we come back to school, they do so in a safe way. What you should expect, I think, now is that the teachers' unions will be coming, and many of them already have, to go and look for relief or concessions from the local contracts, and that's probably what's going to take place now.
There is a process of impact bargaining. It doesn't mean communities need to make concessions, but they do need to go through an impact bargaining process if the unions ask for that, correct?
So there are different interpretations of that. I would strongly recommend that you speak with your legal counsel first, but generally speaking, discussions between locals and the unions happen regularly. What that turns into is a little unclear, but I would strongly recommend that you talk to your attorney, your in-house attorney, about what to do.
Yes, that's very good advice. And imagining that the communities have been doing that along. Labor law is an area of great specialty, and it's always good to be very prepared by talking in advance about the steps. Here's another question. Clearly, there will be additional transportation costs for those students who need to be transported. Will there be funding for those additional costs?
So right now there's the $194 million and the $202 million, which is the first one follows more of a Title I formula. So poorer districts got more money than others. The $200 million is on a per kid basis, $225 per kid. And that's where you can pay for things like additional transportation costs, PPE, technology, and the like.
Have you released guidance for after-school programs that are offered by the towns and not to the school district? That may have been offered earlier, but I'm just, that's a question where regarding the programs that are run by the towns, not the school.
So we don't have purview over that. We do recognize that there are some schools that allow those programs to operate in their buildings. And so there has to be some serious discussions about marrying health and safety needs and protocols with them, but we don't oversee those programs at this time.
And regarding the additional grant funding that you mentioned, can districts use these funds through fiscal 21 and 22? Is there a restriction regarding the use of those are essentially CARES Act funds, correct?
So the $194 million is CARES Act. The $200 million, I believe, is from the state, Lieutenant Governor, is that correct? And I'll send you guys back the information on the deadlines on them. I feel like the CARES Act money might end this December and the other one might be more open-ended, but I've got to just confirm that. I don't want to.
Catherine, you're here. You can confirm that.
I'll unmute you, Catherine. Hold on. Let's see. Here you go.
Okay. Thank you. Yes. So I can just confirm the ESSER grants are available through 22, I believe, Commissioner Riley. The coronavirus, the 202 that's set up is a $225 per student amount. That must be spent by this December of calendar year 2020.
Although there is a possibility that that could be changed if there is a fourth or a fifth or sixth, however the federal government wants to count it, relief package, because one of the issues is the rules regarding CARES Act funds. So right now, that's the case. It may change, correct?
That's correct.
That's fair,
yep. We're also waiting to see if there's a fourth stimulus package, what the strings will be that could be attached to it. I know, for instance, in the Senate, there's discussions about more of the dollars would flow to schools that actually do try to reopen versus not. I don't know if that'll survive or not, but there's always different strings that come, whether they're timelines or what you have to do. And so everyone has to kind of pay attention when that new funding source becomes available.
So here's a question, and maybe you can help put to rest a kind of a rumor that we've heard a little bit. Was there a guidance that was issued by your department to superintendents about how much to cut in anticipation of a state aid reduction? This particular official is saying that their superintendent cut 30% of the school's workforce. So just wanted to ask you directly.
Since you're asking me directly, I will answer you directly. No such guidance was forthcoming from DESE.
That's what we thought. So, okay, that's good. And so now all the municipal CEOs hear that. And again, the broader discussion about the timing of guidance on Chapter 70 is a question that state leaders are taking, and if the Lieutenant Governor has something to add later, that would be very welcome. Are towns eligible to submit funding reimbursements on behalf of regional school districts for COVID-related expenses in round two? If so, are CARES funds assessed to each member town or just the town submitting on behalf of the sub-applicant? Should member towns plan to submit round two costs on behalf of the regional school district equally or proportionally based on assessment?
So I think you're going to see us put out some information on that from Bill Bell, our CFO, that can get you greater clarity. I don't know if Catherine wanted to weigh in with any of that, but you should expect some more information coming from us.
Sure. So I think it's worth noting that the $202 million that's going out to schools directly goes at the district level. And so regional schools should be getting money through that. And that money does not need to kind of route back through the participant municipalities. With respect to the round one coronavirus relief money, the municipal side of the program, which we distributed costs for FY20 already, and there's going to be a round two in the early fall, we just updated the FAQs on the Division of Local Services website to address this exact question. Essentially, what we are saying is that to the extent that cities and towns wish to use municipal money for regional school districts, they are free to do so and to essentially treat regional schools as sub-recipients. Kind of how they work that out between various member municipalities is not something that we are intending to opine on at this time, but we will definitely keep in contact with DESE. I do think that the way the phase four, the way the federal conversation is evolving, does suggest that there's additional school money that will be in the offing. So I think some of these questions may kind of resolve themselves to some extent.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner, if there are certain fall sports that cannot be safely conducted, is it under consideration to take safer winter or spring sports and move them forward?
I know there has been discussions about that. I know there are a few other states that have tried to move some fall sports, for instance, to the spring. But I know there was also a great reluctance to do that because you have multi-sport athletes who might miss out on one of the sports. And so I'm not exactly sure where they're going to land. I don't know if the Lieutenant Governor wanted to weigh in on this.
Yeah, but I can speak to that. We have a work group, as you may know, that is studying the sports for the upcoming year, as well as sports that are underway today and now. The guidance comes through the EEA, through the Environmental Affairs Department. And at the same time, for instance, like last week, we updated that guidance around soccer for competitions. That was effective now because there are a number of leagues that participate in this activity. And the guidance allowed for soccer to be considered a moderate risk sport, for instance. The work group is going to work to update the EEA guidance that applies to all youth sports and amateur sports, no matter who hosts them. Independent schools, leagues, MIAA, and at the same time, we're working with MIAA around their guidance for sports within their organization for the upcoming school year. That would include all levels of risk and sports throughout the year, but it will ultimately be up to MIAA to determine how to organize those sports under the state's guidance, which is being formulated with medical advisors to do that. So that is to be released very soon. It could be in early August for groups to be able to plan for activities for students when school resumes.
Excellent, thank you. There are two questions. I think we have 2 minutes left for the commissioner. We have two questions on testing. One is extremely long and detailed. The other gets right to the point. So we're gonna go to, and it covers the others. Any progress on the state having quick, no hassle, free and extensive testing available for educators, staff and students when we have an issue, and also a way to quickly provide contact information so that the close contacts are put into some sort of a database and to help tracking and containing potential outbreaks at school level?
So we're working with Mary Lou Sutters, who's the coronavirus czar and also the head of HHS through this issue right now. We hope to have more information in the next week or so about what the protocols are gonna be. Obviously, we put out stop-start guidance, what would happen if and when a child feels sick, if they get sick on the bus or a teacher falls sick, what happens at the school level? What does it take to, close down a classroom, close down a school, things like that. The testing piece is in process right now. And we'll have that information for you ASAP.
Thank you very much. I think, let's see, that covers all of the questions that are not ones that other people can answer on this, because I see some that are particularly for Catherine and Sean that I think they can handle regarding other spending questions. Anything to close, Commissioner, before you have to go?
No, I appreciate everybody's hard work. Obviously, the doctors have weighed in regarding our low transmission rates in New England. You're seeing the other New England states think about reopening too. What it's going to look like is going to be decided locally. But we also have to be on guard for, a second spike. It could happen later in the year. We just don't know. And so we've tried at the department to have our districts be prepared for all contingencies and make the best decisions they can. Right now, the doctors are telling us that this is probably the time to start the process of getting kids to go back in school. They've also said, however, we need to be prepared if a second spike comes. And so that's, for us, it's all about the planning and the preparation that the districts have to do. And we look forward to seeing their plans on Friday.
Great. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Take care, guys. Appreciate
the
time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Lieutenant Governor, now the forum is yours once again.
Okay. First, thank you to your superintendent, your school committees. You're working with parents in your community. The department, working in collaboration with everyone, is aiming toward a safe and successful reopening of our schools. We all know how important it is for our kids to learn. We've all learned a lot from the experience at the end of the last school year and how to improve upon that. And I know everyone's anxious about this, but it's really important to do it and do it right. A lot of parents are anxious to know so they can plan. Those who are working want to get back to work. What do they do with their children? There's a lot at stake at the same time. So just thank you, everyone, for working through it. It's a ton of work, but it needs to get done. Let me just give you a few updates. First of all, on testing, we've talked about this a lot in this group. Our administration yesterday announced an expansion of our targeted free COVID-19 testing sites across our Commonwealth. It's called Stop the Spread Initiative. It adds new testing sites that are free and available to all residents of the community, asymptomatic, symptomatic, no barriers for this testing. The expansion sites include Agawam, Brockton, Methuen, Randolph, Revere, Springfield, Taunton, and Worcester. In addition to the first set of communities are available, people there are available, can avail themselves of the testing sites. Chelsea, Everett, Fall River, Lawrence, Lowell, Lynn, Marlborough, New Bedford continue. So there's 16 sites in total right now available for testing through August 14th. It should be noted, people are asking, how did we determine these communities? And then in the last 2 weeks, these municipalities were seeing a positive test rate that is double the state's, and while making up 10% of the state's total population, they've accounted for 15% of the state's positive tests in the past 2 weeks. So it just underscores the importance of the data collection and how we're using data to inform our decisions around adding testing capacity to communities where it makes the most sense. And it's yielding good results, further information. So in the 8 communities originally chosen, in the first week, testing was up from 48% from the week before the sites went live, and up 24% statewide. So we know that the expansion will continue this trend in increasing testing. These communities were also experiencing a lower rate of testing. So we felt that we were vulnerable there because we didn't have enough testing to really know what was going on in the community. So we'll continue to monitor and add testing sites where it makes sense to do so. Travel order. So you are aware that we changed our travel order. Things change in this environment, right? Change is a word that really does sum up the life that we live today. There's lots of change. And while the virus spread in our Commonwealth appears to be and is much lower than it was at the height back in April, other parts of our country have had outbreaks and an explosion of COVID positive cases. Learning from that and listening to our medical advisors, we thought it was the right time to update our travel order. And the executive order was issued, but it's effective August 1st. So that's this coming weekend. The executive order is mandatory for all travelers of our Commonwealth, including out-of-state visitors and college students returning to campus this fall, and Massachusetts residents returning home. They're required to fill out the Massachusetts travel form, which is simple form. It's at mass.gov/MA traveler. In the first few days of the form being on site, we had over 600,000 views. So people are looking at it and completing it. Now there are there's also the requirement that visitors and residents quarantine for 14 days unless they are coming from a low rate of infection and retransmission as defined by DPH state. Right now, those states are New England, New York, New Jersey, and Ohio. And Dr. Madoff can get into this a little bit further, but the states that are determined to be low-risk states are defined by an average daily case per 100,000 below 6 and positive test rates below 5% measured over a 7-day rolling average. So we use that as our criteria. We'll continue to monitor what's happening in other states and update our website to define what the status is of that state. So if you are an employer, if you are a person traveling, if you have family looking to come here, you have to just keep looking at the website to understand what the status of our travel order is in Massachusetts. Now, there are some exemptions to the travel order that include people passing through the state, you're not staying, you're trying to get to someplace else, people commuting for work across our border, people traveling for medical treatment, people complying with military orders, traveling to work in federally designated critical infrastructure sectors. Anyone who chooses not to quarantine must produce a negative test result upon request, and those that do not comply are subject to a $500 fine per day, up to that. And you must remain in quarantine until you get a negative test result. I think I said Ohio instead of Hawaii, or it was heard Ohio. I stated Hawaii. So it's New England, New York, New Jersey, Hawaii, for those who are keeping track of the states. We are also asking employers, all employers, that includes state and municipal government, as well as lodging operators and others, to keep looking at this information. Lodging operators in particular are required to inform guests about the order at the time of booking and arrival, and they're encouraged to communicate this information to their visitors. We are updating our HR policies at the state relative to how state employees are traveling, whether it's by necessity or for personal pleasure or reasons. When we complete the analysis and update our HR policies, we will share that with MMA so that MMA can share that with you as the municipal government. I would also, there's a lot of work that has been done as well on food security. I just want to give you an update, and I see some conversation in the chat around this. First, a big thank you to FEMA, MEMA, municipalities who all work together, great collaboration to figure out how to locally source, package, and distribute food to food insecure individuals and families in your communities. You set out on a mission to solve this problem during the height of the pandemic and came up with a set of best practices that frankly was worth analyzing and figuring out how we continue in the Commonwealth. And as a result of your good work and also our colleagues in the legislature, Joe Comerford and Margaret Ferrante, Hannah Kane and Bruce Tarr, we all worked together to figure out how to move this forward. Last week, we were at the Salvation Army in Lynn to acknowledge their incredible efforts and provide an update on the $36 million food security infrastructure grant that we recently established through our food security task force. In our initial round, 26 awards totaling nearly $3 million to invest in technology, increase capacity, and other assistance to help producers distribute food was made possible. And this is actually not done. I mean, this is a rolling application and award process right through September 15th. So there's a lot of funding there that is available to help you. So I think that came up on the chat. How can we continue to work through these issues when the FEMA money stopped? We have this fund that can help continue this effort. We also have an exciting update through MASTAR, the Department of Agricultural Resources, and the Division of Marine Fisheries, in their final stage of an update to the website, which is going to be called Mass Grown Exchange Platform. So not only are we trying to feed food and secure individuals and families, but at the same time, we can help local growers, fishermen, and small businesses all throughout our Commonwealth who create food, package it in a way that makes sense for food pantries and the food bank and others to be able to distribute locally grown and sourced foods using technology and innovation to get it into the hands of the people who need it the most. So this exchange is the matchmaking system that is going to be up and running as well. So I want you to be aware of that, and we will share the link with you when it is live. It should be going live, could be this week, probably, or maybe next week. We've also launched 39 new vendors across the Commonwealth for our Healthy Incentives Program, and made possible by the infusion of $5 million in additional funding as part of the Food Insecurity Task Force. And we recently launched Food Assistance Decision Tree to help residents in need to determine which programs they may be eligible for. That can be found at mass.gov/findfoodhelp. So not only are these resources available, but if you have the resource, but the people who need it can't figure out how to use it, doesn't really solve the problem for them. So we're trying to break down all the barriers, all the bureaucracy, and make it as easy as possible for everyone to participate and actually really help the people get their the food and the nutrition that they need, especially during this time. You touched on budget a little bit earlier with that announcement today with the legislature confirming the 3-month interim budget. Obviously, we're all anxious around seeing federal relief will look like for municipalities and our school districts. And of course, it's a priority of all of ours to set local aid in Chapter 70 so that you can build your budgets for fiscal 21, which is a priority for all of us. So more to come there. I can also just highlight, based upon what was shared in the chat, that last Friday, there was guidance issued for electives in school. So electives like chorus, band, theater, dance, visual arts, physical education, and activities. So someone was asking about municipal activities for youth in schools that might not be sponsored by the school, but by a partner organization within the community. That guidance is on the reopening website, and it might help some of these organizations at least see this early guidance to determine how they can put their program together for the fall relative to those categories of activities. And again, sports being also an activity that many youth participate in, that guidance is also available through EEA and will be updated further next week. With that, I'm happy to take some questions. And again, we have Dr. Madoff, as well as ANF, Catherine Hornby, and Sean Cronin here to address any questions that you have.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. That's a lot of information that's been provided. Thank you very much. On the, I noticed a few questions on the travel order piece. One is just a request, please, as soon as you can share that, the Commonwealth's HR policy, hopefully before August 1st, we can get that out to local officials because they're already contemplating some challenges in terms of employees who are going to Florida or other places.
That is the goal. That is the goal because we know it's going live August 1st. So that is our goal.
Great. Thank you very much. And then also There was a question about, and I know this is on the state website as well, but it might be good for everyone to hear this too, just in terms of the testing, when does the test have to have been taken and the result back in order for the quarantine to be limited?
You can, before coming to the Commonwealth, take a test, for instance, 72 hours before, prior to arrival. So the COVID test result administered no more than 72 hours prior to arrival in Massachusetts can also be available if you're asked for an individual to produce in lieu of a quarantine. Dr. Madoff, do you have anything to add to that?
No, that's correct. Within 72 hours, the test should be taken. And we realize that there are some delays in testing that are happening with some of the national laboratories. We do better here in Massachusetts, but in the event that the test isn't back yet, the individual can quarantine while awaiting the result of that test. Also, there is a provision for testing to be done here if it can be done, if it can be done at a local site. Again, the individual will be asked to quarantine while awaiting that test result.
Good, thank you. I do know that there are a couple of fiscal questions, budget questions that have come in. One had to do with getting FEMA reimbursements. Can the town submit COVID-19 expenses to FEMA on behalf of regional school districts? And I know that you have made a point about trying to maximize federal reimbursement before using CARES funds, for example. So.
Catherine, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Sure. So I just wanted to say that's an excellent question. We welcome questions with respect to FEMA reimbursement because we think that the strategy here for all of us collectively is to try to make sure that we are not leaving dollars on the table, and where FEMA reimbursement is available, that we actively encourage you to seek that out and secure it. I actually didn't appreciate that the question had a regional school flavor. And so I'm happy to follow up on that, but I think that, I know that MEMA has resources available for entities that are filing for FEMA reimbursement, and MEMA and their consultant Guidehouse is available to assist with those with those applications, and we strongly encourage you to pursue them.
Some towns under regional schools cover vocational transportation separate from the district. How will this be covered for costs due to COVID-19? So if the regional school district is getting some funding, but the community is generally paying for transportation, but the funding that's coming from the CARES Act funds going directly to the vocational school, how should communities handle that?
So I would say there's a mix of funding sources that are already available. Even before we get into any kind of phase four money, there is money that we've made available directly to municipalities, as well as money that's going directly to school districts. And so we would encourage you to kind of think through these questions, submit for your costs where they're directly related to COVID. And I think that where there's money that's going both to the town side and to the school side, it seems like this is a resolvable question. We'd be happy to add an FAQ on the DLS website to address it more directly.
Great, thank you. I'm trying to see if there are some unanswered fiscal questions, just some more requests for general guidance on local aid. I think that covers those to date.
Jeff.
Yes.
I'm sorry. There is one about setting tax rates.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, that's something we've discussed internally at DLS. But I want to say more than half of the 351 communities set their tax rate in November and December. So, 30 or so communities set it during July, August, September. And we sent something out a month or so ago. Suggesting that communities hold off, because if you set a tax rate with either too high or too low estimates for state aid, that might cause a problem. But in terms of DLS, now our capacity to approve tax rates in November, December, because this is asking about a budget coming out in October, so what's going to happen after? In terms of capacity, we'll be able to handle the crusher of tax rates that come in like we normally do in September, in November and December. But if it does get to a point where there aren't state aid numbers that can be used in, say, the November timeframe, that's a different conversation. I think there'd have to be a legislative fix to that. And you know, we started thinking about that internally, what that would mean. But as of right now, even with a October state budget, we believe that there shouldn't be an issue getting the tax rate set on DLS's end. And again, the vast majority of communities don't set their tax rate until later in the calendar year anyway. So I think we'll be prepared for that. But if it does get pushed out, it's something we'll have to discuss in terms of a legislative fix.
Thank you. Let's see, a bunch of questions have popped up. I am, to be fair to the people who asked ones early on, I'll go back up to those, Lieutenant Governor. There are some general health, Department of Public Health questions regarding, I think it's the dashboard with the green and the yellow dots on the dashboard. Is there any indication of what combination of yellow or red lights that would give the public an indication that there would be a consideration of rolling back phases?
Okay, so you're talking about how to move either forward or backwards?
Yes.
Well, I think what's one of the reasons why the testing strategy that we've just described is underway. Testing is going to be an integral way that we determine how to address COVID positive rates or higher incidence of COVID positive in communities and be able to contact trace and isolate and quarantine. There are going to be situations that do require immediate response. There have already been publicly noted situations where when we've identified an outbreak, we have mobilized, for instance, mobile testing with a rapid response to understand who's COVID positive and ask them to isolate, quarantine, and allow us to contact trace. That is going to continue to be a major piece of our strategy as we go forward. And there's a lot more research and development on testing and better testing that is hopefully going to come into the marketplace so that we can incorporate that as we go forward. Governor has been talking with federal officials about adding more testing capacity to our Commonwealth's strategy. And obviously that's going to be a big part of how we have students return to college campuses in the fall and something that we will consider going forward. I also wanted to say the industry reopening here in the Commonwealth has had significant compliance requirements that businesses, coupled with the amazing work of your local boards of health, have complied with, more so than not. I mean, you see some outliers like the cruise ship in Boston Harbor, which we were all shocked to see that many people on a vessel on the higher deck without face coverings on. And as a response to that, there was a cease and desist on that action. But for the most part, businesses are complying with the specific protocols that we put out. They want to do that for their workforce and need to, as well as to have a successful business with patrons coming back again and again. We are concerned, and I think that you're seeing it in your communities with larger social gatherings that people are having in public places, whether it's a park or a beach or private celebrations that are going way beyond a family gathering where there's distancing hygiene and face coverings being deployed. And that is a concern, I think, to all of us on this call, and why the testing that we're doing makes a whole lot of sense when we see something, to be able to track it down, like the matter in Chatham, to find who was involved and be able to ask them to quarantine, isolate, and talk to us about who else might have been involved. So that will continue to be a big part of our strategy. We monitor this data very closely. We worked very hard, all of us, to get to this place, and we are deeply concerned, like you are, seeing what's happening in other places in the country being something that could potentially creep into New England and this Commonwealth. So we all need to be working diligently every single day and remind people that COVID is very much with us, and it can easily creep back into the mainstream if we don't do all the right things to keep it away from us.
I think that there are a couple more questions. We're getting up on the hour, so we'll go through as quickly as we can. Just a clarification that the travel order for August 1st does not exempt essential municipal employees or public safety employees. Is that correct?
In terms of exempting?
They say a police officer travels to Florida and then comes back. They still would have the quarantine requirement.
Yes, that's correct.
Correct.
Yeah. And so that's one of the reasons why the state's HR policy on employees returning, because there may be a situation where communities will not want to authorize vacation if it would then take the person out of service for a period of time that the community cannot afford to have that happen.
That's correct. If for work purposes, people commuting for work purposes, obviously there's an exemption for that, but if it's for personal purposes, that's something that people need to evaluate very carefully.
Thank you for that clarification. Let's see. Testing, we've covered just a great deal here. I'm scrolling through the chat to see if there are any new questions. Question regarding senior centers. Any updates relative to the reopening of senior centers? Just a concern that since they're in stage four, there are facility and employment and then also service issues for seniors.
Yeah, we are concerned for our older residents and the senior centers being a gathering spot for them could be challenging. So we'll continue to evaluate that. It's been said before, outdoor is better than indoor. And if there are some ways that we can get our senior community doing healthy things outdoors, that's encouraged and supported. But indoor gatherings would be difficult for us to incorporate at this time. We'll continue to evaluate that.
Here's a final question regarding what if, as we get word of level funding of UGA and level funding plus of Chapter 70, does this rely heavily on additional federal funds? This is a question from a local official. What's the comfort level that needed federal money will materialize?
Okay, so that is all under evaluation. I did mention briefly that there's more to come on that. So I just ask you to be just a little more patient.
Yes.
And there's more to come.
Great, thank you very much. And then what if the employee left on vacation before the travel restriction went into effect? Can they take a test upon returning to the state and then return to work?
I think the test is the key part of that.
Yes.
And maybe, Dr. Madoff, you can talk about how someone like that can have access to a test quickly. I saw in the chat some references that doctor's approval could be challenge for someone who wants to get tested and get a result quicker here in the Commonwealth.
Right. So the testing on return is an option, and you know, the challenges of timing are there, and the challenges of finding a testing site are there. There are testing sites that are available and open to all, and these can be accessed. It's important to look at the individual test site when you look at the you know, Massachusetts Get Tested webpage. There are a number of test sites, and some of them are open and do not require a physician order. So I think there is access. We don't want to, you know, encourage this. You know, we'd like people to get tested before they return, so as not to use up testing resources here in the state. But there are options available if necessary.
And upon return, quarantine until you have the test result.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Okay, I just want to thank everybody very much for all of your attentiveness, your hard work, and we'll stay on it, and happy to provide another update when it makes sense. I'll take your lead on that one, Jeff. Thank you to all the members. Really appreciate your hard work.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor, and to Dr. Madoff and the whole team, Catherine and Sean and Jana and Jessica and others who have, we just heard their voices come on to answer questions. Thank you all very much. The next officially scheduled briefing is Tuesday, the 25th of August. Although if there is a major development that requires a briefing, we'll work with you, obviously, Lieutenant Governor and the administration, to schedule that. But in the meantime, the next scheduled briefing is Tuesday, August 25th at 1 o'clock. Until that time, all of the information that we receive from the administration will be posted and distributed on the MMA website and sent out to members on a weekly basis in these updates. So thank you very much to all of you, and to the local officials who have been tuning in. Thank you for your leadership, your guidance, and all of the efforts that you are taking to continue operations in your communities and to fight the COVID-19 virus. Thank you very much, and we wish you a good afternoon.
Thank you.